The views expressed on this podcast are those of the guest, not of the Department of Defense or its elements.
Welcome to the Center for Army Lessons Learned podcast, Insights from the Fight, the podcast dedicated to bringing you lessons learned from exercises, warfighters, and Army fielded forces.
I'm your host, Jeremy Sturmer. Today, we're discussing how to more effectively leverage NCOs and staff processes.
Too often, units struggle to integrate NCOs into their staff processes or underutilize NCOs. Today, we're discussing how to more effectively leverage NCOs and staff processes. Joining us today is a leader who's seen it all, Sergeant Major Mike Robinson. Mike, please tell us some of your experiences and staff assignments as a senior NCO.
Good morning, Jeremy, and thanks for the introduction. Over the span of 35 years, I've had the distinct pleasure of serving in leadership and staff positions starting at platoon sergeant, trained NCO, Ops Sergeant Major for a joint task force, being very fortunate to be a nominated Command Sergeant Major at the 1 and 2 star levels, and most recently serving at the component command level, serving as the Army Reserve DCG Sergeant Major, responsible for day-to-day training, manning, equipping, policies, and outcomes.
Let's dive into some of the common challenges and practical solutions for maximizing the impact of staff NCOs. The experience and developmental assignments for staff NCOs vary widely. Often NCOs at the battalion level are serving on staff for the first time.
What are the key skills and competencies that NCOs bring to the staff that officers might not realize?
Jeremy, that's a great question to start with. I think there's some misconceptions that NCOs' past experiences at company level or from institutional assignments isn't value added. What do I mean by that? When staff sergeants or sergeant first classes come from a platoon or company level, either as platoon sergeant or even as section sergeant, sometimes those skills, abilities, and knowledge aren't really recognized. Their experiences with conducting troop leading procedures, conducting and participating in individual and collective training, even running a team or a section, or even being a drill sergeant or an instructor, all those experiences provide valuable skills that NCOs bring to the table. The key is how they are integrated into the staff by the S3 or mentored by the Ops Sergeant Major.
Sometimes we see commanders or staff leadership over-rely on officers when it comes to some of those staff functions. How do you break that and give a voice to NCOs on the staff, and particularly from the role of an Ops Sergeant Major or a Sergeant Major, and how they shape that environment?
I think it starts with building trust. So the S3, the XO, and the Ops Sergeant Major must have a solid working relationship. They must foster a sense of trust as a team, understanding what every member of the staff's strengths and weaknesses are and where they can improve.
But it starts with trust. And then the next part of that is the delineation of tasks. Giving those NCOs those tasks and trusting them to do the task. Provide them the training if they need training, to provide so they can conduct that function. But also giving them the task and trusting them to do it and hold them accountable.
You mentioned some of the things you can do to help them as they're developing. When trying to integrate into NCOs on the staff, what are the tools that the Sergeant Major or the S3 or the XO can use to make sure that they're giving the NCO the correct framework for what they're trying to do? I'm thinking, rules and responsibilities within the SOPs. How do those products help the NCO that's coming to the staff quickly become a contributing member?
So first, staff training and staff exercises. I cannot stress that enough. Going over staff processes and functions, then reviewing SOPs is the best way to develop all staff members, not just NCOs. That way, concepts associated with MDMP, course of action development, battle tracking, production of orders, etc., can be addressed. For example, the Army has doctrine on how to conduct MDMP. We've all read it. But as you know, depending on what type of unit you're in, MDMP might look a little different. At the unit level, SOPs are geared towards whatever the unit's capabilities are and the type of mission that they do. I think staff development events are an underutilized tool across the force. They can provide opportunities to level the bubbles for the entire staff, ensure there's a shared understanding of commander's priorities and processes to achieve them. But every NCO needs to read. They need to read doctrine, exercise reports, AARs, or even call products. All those things can enhance the NCO's skill set and the staff's functionality. NCOs at every level must be hungry for knowledge and information.
Beyond those discussions, what are some key indicators for a sergeant major to recognize my NCOs are not being integrated enough, or even some of the soldiers on the staff? And then, you know, how do you think that you would engage with either the commander or the XO to improve that once you've identified it as an issue?
I think the first thing, which is can be hard, is as part of an operations staff, because everyone has a role and a function and sometimes an expertise, there has to be space for each one of those individuals, no matter what their rank is, to have a voice. If they don't have a voice and they're pushed aside, well, you know, and I've seen it too, well, NCOs do this, officers do that. And yes, there's some of that on a staff, right? However, each person that's on that staff comes with expertise, comes with a certain amount of experience and insight, builds a better collaborative environment. If the ops sergeant major notices that, you know, sergeant first class so-and-so who manages communications or whatever and is a communications expert isn't being leveraged, then that could be identified gap. Ensuring that everyone has, when the planning and the course of action development, the MDMP is going on, that each one of those individuals, officer and NCO, they have a voice on whatever their issue is, whether it's sustainment, maintenance, communications, etc. Each one of them should have an opportunity to help the S3 and the XO make decisions.
You and I talked before the podcast about the leadership development programs and officer professional development, NCO professional development. What other mentorship activities do you see the sergeant major or the ops sergeant major having with the NCOs and the soldiers on the staff to get them up to speed on the expectations for that kind of an assignment?
Making that transition is a challenge. It's a big challenge. First thing I would say to an NCO who's going from the company level to a staff is be prepared to learn. Learn. Staff processes, SOPs, refresh yourself on battle staff skills. If you haven't gone to battle staff, if you haven't, you need to go to battle staff. Get a sense of who does what on the staff. Get around, understand the different roles and functions of the operations staff. Those are critical. Next is you got to trust yourself and trust your experiences. So as a part of that, that NCO, no matter the grade, obviously needs to refresh on orders production, what that really means, which is, you know, as we talked about earlier, getting to the SOPs. Understanding the battle rhythm of the organization, because every organization is a little different. So the quicker they understand the battle rhythm of commanders, key events, etc., staff planning, schedule staff planning, things like that. But then once they get to the team, just a refresher on just the tenets of battle staff would be extremely helpful.
As you look at those responsibilities between current operations and planning, and we think about the future environments that we're going to fight in, where CPs may have to be more dispersed, may have to move more frequently, we expect that we're going to have more redundancy in the training of the staff, both NCOs and officers, able to do each other's jobs. How do you see building that capacity to be able to operate in smaller, more dispersed units as something that the sergeant major has got to help build in the staff?
That is a great and tremendous question. First of all, as we mentioned earlier, staff training and staff exercises, that is where that has to be worked out. Through that training and exercise process, the delineation of responsibilities, manning requirements have to be absolutely lined out, and then training requirements that go along with that all have to be lined out and understood. And as a part of that, then when the staff comes together, they have to come together to everybody needs to understand everybody's job, everybody's function, and how they best can place talent across the staff. Because that's the other thing. Whenever you put a staff together, everyone comes with a different set of skills, a different set of talents that are, you know, outside, you know, doctrinal positions, right? So that has to be realized, but that takes patience. The XO and S3 have to, A, make it a priority to get through that process of training and exercising their staff, but also having the patience to really sit down, the three of them, the XO, the S3, and the OPSR major, to identify within the team who's good at what, who has experience at this, who is better at that. That all helps to make a better staff. And there has to be some leader maturity, in my opinion, in doing that. You can't be, well, I need a captain who does this because it's supposed to be a captain. Well, in some instances, that's appropriate. But when it comes to being in the field and in combat, my opinion is some of that goes out the window. It's about getting the mission done and putting the best individual who can do that function or task in that position in that moment.
Looking at this from a bigger Army perspective, thinking of the NCO assigned to a staff as a developmental position, what are the value and results that the Army gets out of empowering NCOs and building them beyond the capacity for just the basic roles that they may be assigned to the staff for?
Being an old head, I would say when I grew up as a young NCO, there was an expectation that as you developed, part of the development that was that you become well-rounded, both on the tactical side of driving troops at the platoon and at the company level, and even at the battalion level as you progress, you know, as a sergeant major, but also on the training and operational side. So, and I think the Army has gotten away from that a little bit. To me, they go hand in hand. Whether you're driving troops at platoon or company level, or go from that to being a section sergeant or operation NCO or operation sergeant major, to me, they're all part of the skill set that an NCO needs just to be successful moving forward, especially when you get to the E9 rank. By the time you get to the E9 rank, there's an expectation that you are well-rounded, that you have done both leadership and staff and or operational assignments, so that you, when you get to the next higher level of being an E9, be it a operations sergeant major or a command sergeant major, that you have some skill set and some experience at how things function. Because once you become operations sergeant major and or command sergeant major, now you are becoming an advisor all things operation, advisor on all things leadership and tactics. So you have to be developed along the way in both those things. So moving forward, as we're looking at future combat and what it may or may not be, I think it's imperative that NCOs be developed and absolutely put into those positions to do great things and learn great things, so that if they do progress to be in an E9 sergeant major or command sergeant major, that they would be equipped and have the skills, knowledge, and abilities to better either help manage operations and commander's intent, or as a command sergeant major, provide insights and experience to managing the mission. So did I answer your question?
It did, and it makes a great transition point for us to talk about what we need to do as officers to assist an incoming operations sergeant major or command sergeant major in that first billet. What are some things from your experience that you would say are misconceptions that commanders have about what the needs of that newly minted ops sergeant major or command sergeant major are that allows them to be effective when they come into the position?
Another great question. I would say some of the misconceptions are that newly, fresh out of the sergeant major academy, sergeant major knows it all. Which is not true, right? It's just, yes, it's a course and there's greatness in that, but it's no different than a CJSE student and or newly minted War College colonel come out of there and now they know everything. They don't. Because again, we'll go back to experiences and assignments. They are knowledgeable, guaranteed they're ready to go, and they have a large base of experiences that just need to be tapped into. That goes back to communication. So again, that S3, that OPSR major's rater, just need to sit down and talk, right? Sit down and get a sense of, again, going through assignments. If they've been an OCT or if they've been worked at a strategic level or worked at a TDA assignments, whatever those assignments are, between that ops sergeant major and that raider, you know, kind of come together and see potentially what their strengths may be based off assignments, or what some of their gaps may be. Maybe they just need to refresh on some things. Maybe they need to relearn or learn what that organization does and how they do it. Again, I always go back to that NCO, that sergeant major, is an asset to the organization, because the Army has invested, you know, multiple years and millions of dollars to train and ensure that that NCO is prepared to fill that position. So it's just, but it's up to leaders, you know, leaders wield capability. They manage employment. It's no different in employing a soldier. Managing employment of that soldier who is an asset is no different. Understand their capabilities, understand the past training, and outlining future training that they may do or need to do, and then understanding how they will fit and making a plan of how they will fit into the staff.
You and I talked before the podcast, and we talked about the transition of, as a company level leader, you're focused on troop leading procedures and supporting that over most of your Army career as an NCO. And as you move up to the battalion level, we shift to MDMP. Very different process, although they support each other.
Yep.
Are there things that you would highlight to a new NCO who is making that jump, whether at the junior NCO level or at the sergeant major level, in terms of things that they need to focus on to get themselves up to speed on that differences between those two processes?
It is it's a big transition. I would, and I have in the past, I've mentored new NCOs to the staff in just helping them conceptualize, you're no longer the doer, but now you're the one who enables the doer to do. Given their experiences, they provide nuances to what the needs are. So when you're planning to support a platoon in a certain exercise, if you've been a former platoon sergeant, you can say, oh, I know they're going to need this. I know when they get to this point, they may need that, where the sustainment, classes of supply, whatever the case may be.
When the staff is getting ready to plan an operation and looking at feasibility, or they just need some ground truth when developing courses of action, your skills and abilities and experience coming from the company level help in that process. You help the S3 or the XO or the Sergeant Major, you're a reminder of what things and how things work at the company level.
One of the other big shifts is the relationship. As a company first sergeant, you're able to bring your platoon sergeants in multiple times at the day, potentially, depending on what your mission is, to be able to give them guidance. On a battalion staff, you don't have that ability to bring companies together, certainly when they're in a deployed environment, as frequently. How does that change the way that you communicate and the relationship that you have with the people that you're trying to issue orders to?
I would say it's battle rhythm, battle rhythm, battle rhythm. As an ops sergeant major or a staff NCO, operations NCO, you have to have an innate understanding of not only that the battle rhythm in your headquarters, but the battle rhythm in the units that you support down in the companies. And seek opportunities to reach out to those formations as needed. You have to insert yourself into their processes. You have to insert yourself into the battle rhythm in such a way that, if needed, you set up lines of communication to collaborate on needs, wants, concerns of those that you support who are out in the field. It's the same thing, right? You just, as long as that, as an ops arm major or operations NCO, you understand that you are supporting the effort. All your lines of communication and collaboration are about supporting the effort, which is that platoon or that company. It's just understanding and inserting yourself into the battle rhythm process and seeing it all in front of you so that you can find ways and opportunities to directly, if need be, you know, support those efforts, support that commander out in the field, support that platoon leader, platoon sergeant, wherever they may be. No, it's not going to be a normal staff sitting in a room type of environment. But one thing we haven't talked about as part of this process is being a staff NCO, even a staff officer, you can't sit in the building all the time. You have to figure out a way how to circulate, to do checks and balances, to get feedback from the units that you support to ensure that things are going the way they were planned and or thought of. Getting out of the shop, as it were, is an absolute must Not all the time, but there's times where the S3, the XO, and the SAR major, or the ops NCO needs to get out during a training or an exercise event just to see for themselves how things are going.
Would you say that fostering that collaborative environment often led to better outcomes for the staff because you were able to get feedback that allowed you to improve the plan, change the plan? Is it more often than not that is what you see as a result of that collaboration?
I do. So whenever a staff, key leaders on the staff, don't open themselves up to collaborate and communicate across the battalion, in this case that we're talking about, it doesn't breed trust. If the units who are the supported don't trust that the supporting team has their best interests, understands what the commander has expressed them to do and to tackle, and doesn't understand what their needs are, there isn't a lot of operational synergy there, and it doesn't breed trust across the command. It just doesn't.
You mentioned a unique opportunity that the Sergeant Major in particular, and at times the Operations Sergeant Major, have to be able to do battlefield circulation, to be able to get a sensing for not just the commander, but for the XO and the S3,
correct,
the things that are going on in the unit. Let's jump to a different aspect of that relationship and say that there is an issue with the commander. And within that big five, what kind of opportunity does the Sergeant Major and the Ops Sergeant Major have to be able to give truth back to the commander about the unintended consequences of actions that they are having on the staff or the units?
That is a wonderful question that isn't discussed quite enough. First, there's an expectation in the lore of the non-commissioned officer and the backbone of the Army that we provide truth to power to the commander or whoever we support. And this is no different. So we've talked about trust throughout this whole thing, and that's not, you know, everybody thinks operation doctrine, this and that, and all the things that go with it, but really on a staff, communication, trust, collaboration, and training, but those three things, through that process, is where the Ops Sergeant Major should have the ability. It's an expectation that NCOs circulate to get the needs of soldiers, to make sure things are taken care of. And Ops Sergeant Major isn't any different. It just looks different. So the Ops Sergeant Major has the ability, should have the ability, I'll say should, have the ability to go to their S3 and or their commander, you know, knock on the door, shut the door. Hey, sir. Hey, ma'am. This is what I see. Here's my recommendation. Here's where I think we could make some positive changes. I think every non-commissioned officer, be it Ops Sergeant Major or Command Sergeant Major, should approach it that way. It's all about mission accomplishment and what can and should be done based off commander's intent. Every commander, every leader needs a sounding board. And hopefully commanders out there will realize that Ops Sergeant Major, that Ops NCO and Command Sergeant Major can be that sounding board to give them a different perspective on how they see mission accomplishment and see and understand their commander's intent.
Do you see a role for the Command Sergeant Major, Ops Sergeant Major to take feedback from companies, whether the commander or the first sergeant, and provide that to the battalion commander, the XO, or the S3 about the perceptions of how operations are going?
Oh, 100%. For example, when you're getting ready to go to a CTC, there's a lot of activities going on at the same time, and it's a stressful time frame. There's a lot of things that are based on timing, and they need to be done. If the Ops Sergeant Major and the Command Sergeant Major aren't out there circulating where maintenance and packing and training activities are all being done, the commander's really flying blind. So that is their opportunity to get out there, provide feedback, and also elicit feedback from those lower commanders, from those company commanders who are feeling the stress or feeling the pinch on a certain issue, or because something is just not understood, whether it be some kind of coordination or something's not being provided or, you know, timing of something. There's a myriad of things that are going on all the time. That Ops Sergeant Major and that Command Sergeant Major has the opportunity to really get out there through that circulation to, again, build trust between the upper and the lower echelons, that the commander is focused on what their challenges are and trying to help them and fix them. The Ops Sergeant Major and the Command Sergeant Major can absolutely articulate that and reaffirm that the commander is supporting their efforts, and it just needs to be realized, right? Through communication and collaboration.
As you think about the things that an NCO or an Ops Sergeant Major or Command Sergeant Major bring into that first duty position at the battalion level staff, what are some of the products that you think that they need to have in their hip pocket to quickly reference when dealing with the activities that occur at the staff level?
There are those who will deal with it differently, but I will give you my perspective. Every staff NCO, going to even in the big five, you got to become kind of an Army geek. You just have to. You just have to realize that you're going to have to dig into the FMs and TMs. You just have to. 10, 30, 50, 60. You have to commit them to memory, but you have to have a working knowledge of the tenets of those documents, right? And then looking at call documents, for example, that have done a great job of consolidating information and making it a little bit more streamlined. All the MDMP series are phenomenal. CTC trends, phenomenal. Again, just to give you insights and just to get your mind flowing on operations and how things can be done. And looking at it through that lens, not looking at it as a how-to, but looking at it as how things were done, how they can change. What do these things mean for my organization and my formation? How can I use some of that information to help me be a better staff member and being a better staff NCO? So things like that, there's lots of opportunity to just get into the doctrinal references. Get into the doctrinal references for your capability. So whereas it's infantry sustainment, your type of organization, BCT, BEB, get into that doctrine also. Again, not to commit it all to memory, but have a working understanding of what the Army says your formation is supposed to do, what its mission is, what its capabilities are and are not, and which should give you insights on how the Army doctrinally says you're supposed to fight that capability. All those are important to understanding how you fit into being on staff.
If you could, as we wrap up, do you have a story about when effective NCO integration led to better outcomes for your staff or mission success? And what were some of the key factors that made that work, whether it was you as the mentor or the NCO?
Oh, stories. Story time. I will tell you about my time as Ops Sergeant Major of a joint task force in Afghanistan. That was not the plan originally when we got mission to go to Afghanistan. At the beginning, our original mission was to do a doctrinal mission. And we had done our staff exercises, we had done our staff training for that mission set. I had read some other documents on joint task forces, another call product that I had read, and just reading things and reading things and reading things. I, at that point, hadn't had a lot of experience with joint staff and joint operations, as it were. So by the time we got to Afghanistan, of course, mission changed. Staff change, all of a sudden now I'm an Ops Sergeant Major of a multi-compo and multi-service organization with a Colonel 06 as a leader, trying to help my S3 put all this stuff together in one nice, neat little bow. For the both of us, my S3 was a great communicator. He was very knowledgeable about higher level operational processes that I didn't have at the time, but he gave me enough rope to learn very quickly on, hey, this is how Air Force does things, this is how Navy does things, this is how Marine Corps does things. And here's where we, opportunities for us to find synergy to put it all together. And we sat down and we communicated, and I brought some of my experiences from being an OCT and also, you know, working at the company in the platoon level and also working at the staff level as a Sergeant First Class at a battalion early in my career. And using all those experiences and all the base of knowledge and exercise and training that we had done really enabled me to really provide value to my commander and to my boss at the time, the three actual, to put it all together in one nice, neat little bow as best we could to make that mission go. And so I would not have been able to do that if I hadn't had a balanced upbringing. We talked about being balanced and helping me understand the depth and breadth of what we were asked to do, but also combined with what I learned at Desar Major Academy and some and battle staff, putting those all things together really was what helped me become successful at that level. And also, I believe, helping our organization do our mission when we're in Afghanistan.
Excellent. I really appreciate your time today, Sergeant Major Robinson. Thanks for sharing your insights on integrating NCOs into staff processes. Do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
You know, Jeremy, thank you for this opportunity. This is a great conversation that needs to be had, and I think would be great for the Army at large to hear. So thank you for putting this all together. Thank you for Center for Army Lessons Learned for taking the time to make this important to the Army, and good luck to you.
Today, we discussed challenges when leveraging NCOs and provided some ideas to build stronger staffs and achieve better outcomes. For more in-depth guidance on this topic, check out resources available on the CAWL website, www.army.mil/CAWL. You can find CAWL products such as MDMP, First 100 Days NCO, and Home Station Training, and our upcoming product, First 100 Days XOS3, for more insights on topics discussed. Our entire catalog of print and digital publications are available to download on our CAC-enabled site. There you can download digital products and request some of our print products shipped to your unit. CAWL CTC bulletins and post-exercise reports offer lessons learned from recent unit operations in a variety of operational environments.
If you have trouble finding information on our website, use the Request for Information portal and receive direct feedback from an analyst at CAWL.
Finally, if you have a best practice or observation that requires a .milpf solution, submit them directly to CAWL using the Quickfire portal on our website.
I would also like to thank our producer, Ms. Paige Cox, who has been a leader in developing this podcast, and all of our CAWL team members.
Thank you for listening to CAWL's podcast, Insights from the Fight. We're dedicated to providing you with insights that you need to lead, train, and fight today and in the future. Join us next time for another discussion on lessons learned from the force.